This hour of the Jason Rand Show brought to you by American Crawl Space and Pest Services. Lots of news happening all around the world and right here at home. It's time to find out what's trending.
What's trending? Big picture.
There is a slew of anti-gun legislation on the docket, all in one initiative. Joining us in studio with more is our good friend from Cairo Radio, Hannah Scott. Hannah, good morning.
Good morning, Jason.
So take us through this initiative.
Okay, so after some legal challenges over the ballot title of I-1639 were settled by a Thurston County judge last week, backers of that initiative started a very aggressive signature campaign under a very tight deadline. They need to turn in about 260,000 valid signatures by July 6th to get the initiative on the November ballot and have voters decide on whether to enact some pretty sweeping changes to our state's gun laws, especially concerning semi-automatic rifles such as AR-15s. Talman Trask is with the Alliance for Gun Responsibility, the group behind this statewide initiative.
And the goal here is really to make sure that our schools and our communities are safe from the kind of gun violence that terrorizes our country and even our state and city regularly and all too often. To do that, it does three really important interconnected things. Raise the age to purchase semi-automatic assault weapons in the state to 21 from the current age of 18. It'll create an enhanced background check for those weapons.
Now, much like a bill that failed in the legislature this past session, those enhanced background checks for semi-automatic rifles would mean putting the buyer through the same process you have to go through when you buy a handgun in our state right now, which is going through both a federal and a state background check. Right now, people buying rifles here in Washington only have to go through that federal check in the state. Now, the third major component of this is a safe storage requirement, which creates criminal penalties for gun owners who don't safely store their weapons when they end up getting in the hands of the wrong people.
Between 2012 and 2015, a total of more than 33,000 firearms were stolen from individual gun owners in Washington. And that puts firearms into a black market and into dangerous hands and gives people access to guns that they just really shouldn't have in a really obvious way. And dangerous access prevention helps prevent that by helping incentivize secure storage practices, which limit theft opportunities. It also helps prevent school shootings. We know that the majority of school shooters access firearms in their homes or homes with their friends or family.
Yeah. What he also doesn't tell you is that the majority of the stolen gun cases are bad guys stealing guns from bad guys. That's what he doesn't actually tell you, which dramatically changes the narrative, which is why he doesn't tell you that, because what he wants you to think is that just everyday responsible gun owners are having their guns stolen, but they're not reporting it, which is just not true. It does happen every once in a while, but the vast majority of the cases, that's not how it works.
Absolutely not. So what this part of their...
And by the way, are they going to pay for the gun safes?
No, absolutely
not. Okay, but when we talk about voter ID laws, I'm going to rant for one moment.
Go right
please.
Ahead.
When we talk about voter ID laws, what does the left usually say? That is an onerous burden that you're putting on people just to enjoy their right to vote. And yet when we talk about your right to enjoy the Second Amendment, all of a sudden, well, we don't care about the onerous nature of what it is we're doing. We don't care if we're going to charge you not just for the background check, but now to store your guns, even though there are instances which make sense to not have an actual safe.
Absolutely. And that's certainly an argument that you get from the gun rights folks who say that you can't have this. And there's also a fee associated with this initiative that...
Of course there is, because they're trying to make it so difficult for you to get a gun that you and I, just normal people, won't actually go through with the process. All the while, the bad guys still getting their guns.
Yeah, absolutely. So Dave Workman with thegunmag.com says gun owners also have a lot of other concerns with this initiative.
I think the major concerns are that it denies Second Amendment rights, constitutional rights to people 18 to 20 years old or 18 to 21 years old. There's also a concern about the waiting periods, 10 days, a training requirement in order to exercise a constitutional right, and the creation of a statewide gun registry.
So you need training, but again, when you vote, you can be just a big old dummy. You can be, by the way, an 18-year-old dummy who is pushing for policy changes, but now we're saying you can't have a gun.
Yeah, so they have the 10-day waiting period for the semi-automatic
nonsense
rifles. The training period would be, you would have to go through a firearm safety course for those weapons, and also some new document requirements that the gun rights people always say kind of leads to a de facto registry, which is a concern. Now, another aspect of this initiative would require that the Department of Licensing set up a system within 1 year after it passes that allows for annual rechecks of people buying semi-automatic rifles to ensure that they're actually still legally allowed to have them, the weapons that they bought every year. So those checks would be done annually.
We don't want people who have restraining orders or who have established criminal histories after they've purchased these weapons to suddenly be allowed to hold on to them with no guarantee from the Department of Licensing that they're going to be prevented from accessing those weapons in the future. It's an important part of gun violence prevention to not only make sure that we're preventing people who are dangerous to themselves or others from purchasing guns, but also that we're reducing risk and access.
And all of this is in one initiative?
Yeah, so, and that's big concern, some the you know people
why?
On the other side.
You know why, right? I mean, because they put in some stuff that common sense that most people would support with stuff that no one would ever support. And so they're hoping that you'll say, okay, well, we get more good than bad out of all of this.
And possibly. And then, you know, the gun rights people are saying people are signing on to this initiative at the petition gathering phase. It's 30 pages long, yeah. This initiative. And they're not thoroughly reading everything. So that's a concern being raised. A good portion of this initiative, though, really mirrors SB 6620, David Frock's bill in the legislature last session that didn't make it through for a variety of reasons. Some of it, including safe storage, registry, all those kinds of things. So they're essentially putting that with a few more things to the people. We'll see if they get the signatures. They've got about 3 weeks left.
And where do we think they're at?
I couldn't get a solid number yesterday. He said that they're getting flooded with signatures. I do know there's been some concerns raised that both with the head tax referendum signature people and this particular initiative, mm-hmm. that their paid signature gatherers are getting like more than double what some of the others have. I know one initiative, I-1608, which was an open public government thing, just bowed out this cycle because they couldn't afford to match those paid signature gatherers. So they're certainly working hard. We'll see.
And here's the deal, because we talk about the paid signature gatherer stuff and we pretend that that's a bad thing. Well, the left will pretend that's a bad thing when the head tax folks are doing it for a referendum. Every single campaign has to do it. You have to do it. There's no way that you can get enough signatures in as short amount of time as you have, generally speaking, to collect them, if you don't start to pay some folks to go out there who are professionals. Look, you put me out on the corner. I don't know what it was, just walking up the street. No, you got to get someone with a certain kind of personality.
So, and I think that the gist that I saw from the 1608 people when they released that they were pulling out is that they were paying $1 to $2 per person to mm-hmm. gather signatures, whereas this and the referendum is going up to like $5, and they can't afford that. So that's why they're being outspent. But there's no, you know, that's just the way it is. That's how it works.
What do we expect the opposition to be assuming this? And my assumption is they're going to get the signatures. You go in Seattle, you're going to be able to find it. Is there any indication that the NRA is going to put some money into the opposition?
Not that I've seen so far, but I think once we get to that point, once we know that the signatures are valid and it's going to go on, then I think you'll see that kind of thing ramp up to and even including, should it pass, possible legal challenges later down the line.
And what are some of the legal challenges that it could potentially get hit with? Is it this idea that you've got a 30-page initiative with a ton of things that are somewhat related but should, in theory, be separate?
It can go anything from that to requiring fees or payments for safe storage for a constitutional right. It can run the gamut, anything from that.
So you concur, right? You think it's going to get enough signatures?
I would be surprised if it did not.
History in the state of Washington suggests that we're willing to vote into law these types of positions.
I think so. I think, look, this came close to getting done in the legislature. I think there's so much politics around, and we've got a lot of state lawmakers up for re-election this, mm-hmm. this session, that not everybody was going to take a side on this as far as elected officials go. But there's a lot of noise right now, right? We've got Parkland. We've got the March for Our Lives movement. We've got the Santa Fe school shooting. We've got somebody shooting at cars off of 509. Mm-hmm. There is a lot of support.
Because that's a responsible gun owner, by the way, doing that.
I know. And you can make that argument all day. But I think there's a good chance that this for sure gets passed.
And then it gets put up there during a midterm election where the amount of voters tends to be smaller. I don't know if that's going to be the case this time around with a Trump presidency.
Yeah.
But I do know that the folks on the left, the activists, will absolutely be voting, which is why it's super important to actually vote every single election. Otherwise, you're just giving it away to the other side.
Right. And again, I want to go back to the March for Our Lives kids. They're going on their summer tour across mm-hmm. the country where they're really encouraging everybody who's old enough to vote. So it depends on how much momentum
they can
you get.
But they can't own a gun.
They can't own a gun.
That's the position they can take. We're responsible enough to change policy nationwide, but we're not responsible enough to go through the process of owning and operating a gun, even if they grew up as hunters and they're comfortable around guns. Got it. Cool. Thanks.
Yeah.
Every time you come in here, you just make me upset.
What's going on,
Hannah? For more information on Hannah Scott's reporting, go to mynorthwest.com. Hannah, thanks for stopping by.
You bet, Jason.
You're listening to The Jason Rand Show. If you want to join the conversation, send me a text. 1-800-465-8770. That's 1-800-465-8770. It's an Unbetter Tax Resolution Hotline. Welcome back to the Jason Rand Show on AM 770 KTTH and 94.5 FM of the Greater East Side. Joining me in studio, we haven't talked to you in a while, Chris Sullivan, the purveyor of choke points at mynorthwest.com.
I was beginning to think you didn't like me.
Well, I mean, I don't like you, but I'm kidding. I like you just fine. So there's an interesting story you have at mynorthwest.com/choke points about naming rights. And I want you to jump into it because we do a whole lot of projects, including the tunnel that's going to come to downtown Seattle. And we're trying to figure out how to name it. And I'm told some people want Christine Gregoire.
Well, let me put it to you this way. I came up with that idea.
I heard other people talking about it.
Because you think of, when you think of naming a facility like that, you think of, someone who may have had an impact on it or something like that.
And Jason Rance.
She certainly pushed this through against the objections of many. Mm-hmm. And, of course, I also just like the idea of calling it the Greg. so I'm going to go take the Greg to Safeco. It was kind of a funny little way. I mean, because let's face it, the tunnel's going to open September, October-ish, something like that. Later this fall is kind of the latest frame we have.
Of course it will.
Well,
you mean in 30 years?
No, come on. The tunnel is getting ready, and it should be ready to go. Again, it'll be almost 3 years behind schedule.
Yeah.
Let's not forget that. And so a lot of people have asked me, our listeners have asked me, well, are they going to name this thing? How's that work? And so I was like, okay, I know it's a little premature, but let's tell everybody what's going on. And so, basically I did a little story on what does it take to name a facility mm-hmm. like that. And so far, no one has come forward to start talking about, the 99 tunnel and what we're going to call it, if anything. And so there are a couple of ways to do it. The legislature, and this would work for anything, a bridge, a piece of road, the tunnel, whatever. The legislature usually gets together and they come up with a joint resolution of how there's this great community person or someone who had a great impact on our state, whatever. And they would put something forward. They would do all the due diligence with public hearings and things like that. And then they would give it to the Washington State Transportation Commission. The commission, same commission that sets toll rates, things like that. They are in charge of going, okay, yay or nay, we'll go ahead and name this. They're the agency that names it. That's the legislative way. The other way is, Jason, you could go submit a proposal, say, I want to name it X. But the thing is, then it's on you to do all the public outreach and show that there's a bunch of support for this, because the Transportation Commission won't even really consider a proposal unless they know there's some sort of overarching groundswell of support for a name.
What does that mean? What does it mean to say that there's a swell of support?
Well,
so
you would say something like, okay, I want to name it the Rance Soccer Memorial, greatest sport in the history of the world tunnel. That'd be kind of long. We'll come up with an acronym.
No, I like it.
And so you would have to create, a web page mm-hmm. and go, okay, people of Washington, give me your comments. What do you think of this idea? And show some sort of, the public is down with this. They would like this idea. You would have to maybe hold public meetings. You would have to get letters of recommendations, say, from city councils or county councils to show that there's a pretty decent, because we'd be stuck with this thing
forever.
Forever, pretty much.
Until someone changes it.
Right, exactly. Until they decide to rename it something else. And that would have to go through the same process. So that's kind of, what is out there for how you would go about doing it. And, it was also kind of a fun way to come up with ideas, fun ideas for people to comment about what they think it would be, snarky or not. We got plenty of snark.
But even if you show that let's say I want it to be named the Jason Rance Tunnel. And I get all the support from the people and it's all audience members and whatnot. I can still turn that in and they say, no, we're not going to do
that. That is correct.
Yeah, why would anyone waste all their time and energy on it?
Well, because you better make darn sure it's something that has vast appeal for people to name it after, like you would get a veterans highway, mm-hmm. something named after, people like that, like for instance, we renamed the Skagit Bridge after it collapsed, after the state trooper who was killed, directing traffic right there afterwards. That went through a big public process through the legislative side. And so you just, it's one of those things to start thinking about. I mean, we're way premature on this. I mean,
we're not premature. Technically, we're late because this thing should have been open 3 years.
Right. But the thing is that there's no rush to name something. I mean, it can live with the 99 tunnel. You could just call it the tunnel. Dave Ross over at 97.3 FM, he calls it the C-tube. He wants to call it, and I'm like, okay, it doesn't go under the C, Dave.
Yeah, that's a dumb name.
But it goes under Seattle.
That.
So I'm going to regardless, I'm going to call it the C-tube, just because it's kind of fun.
That.
So I mean, it's just a way to kind of we start thinking about it. Again, there's no rush to name it. We can live with the 99.
What are
tunnel.
The snarky ones?
Oh, those. I mean, come on. I mean,
what are the ones that you got that were snarky?
The Kubli. there, you know, the money pit, the money hole, the pipe. Bertha obviously comes to mind right away for that. You know, the big lie instead of the big dig. I mean, we came up with a lot of funny ones like that.
So let's say they want to name it after Scott Kubli, former director of the Seattle Department of Transportation. Can he just say no? And despite all of the public interest, they can move forward with it? Or does he also,
whomever? You would think he'd be part of the public process. I mean, if he went before the commission and
said no,
listen, guys,
but everyone
I really
else
don't
yes.
want this to be named after me, I'm sure that would probably carry a lot of weight.
It wouldn't, because here's the trick, folks. Just say, oh, he's being humble. He's being humble. He has to, because it seems really weird if he stands up here and says, I do want it to be named. Then you'd call him an arrogant jerk. He's just being humble. Let's just go with it anyway.
But you got to remember, he had very little to do with the tunnel. I mean, he
who
came
cares?
In well after we were
it
well
should be
down
named
the
after
road
Mike
on
McGinn,
that.
Former mayor who hated this thing.
Well, that came up
or
as
Mike
well.
Or Mike O'Brien, who hates cars, council member here.
I'm not sure if we had many O'Brien ideas. But, yeah, I mean, it's just kind of a fun way to think of it. I mean, you could be serious about it or not. I mean, I think someone, Gregoire, would probably get a lot of, because she's the one who spearheaded it through the legislature. I mean, we had several people naming it after former Mayor Ed Murray, because he helped, you know, kind of push this through the legislature against many people's objections as well. So, yeah, but so just
it's
I want to let
the
everyone
love
know.
Tunnel.
Well, we could call it like the Tunnel of Love. Yeah, Love Tunnel. I'm taking the LT to the to Safeco. You know, just so it's just here's the process. Here's what it would take. If you want to get involved, you can go to mynorthwest.com. That shows you all the criteria, what you need to do. Right. But, and you could figure it out. And, you know, just whatever. Give us some comments. It's we're having a little fun, but it's something we need to think about at some point.
I would love to hear from you guys. Send me a text on the None Better Tax Resolution Hotline, 1-800-465-8770. 1-800-465-8770. Your text messages. What would you like to name the 99 tunnel? You don't even have to live in the Seattle area. Just give me your suggestions. Send me a text, 1-800-465-8770.
Yeah, because whether you live here or not, you're paying for it.
Yeah, no kidding. Chris Sullivan from Choke Points, MyNorthwest.com. It's the last Choke Points on our sister station, Power Radio. Thanks for stopping by.
Anytime, Jason.
You're listening to The Jason Rant Show. When we come back, the big local right here on AM 770 KTTA. A rat falls from a ceiling of a Bellevue restaurant. It's all caught on tape. Plus, a man in Yakima gets a little too intense with his brand new samurai sword. It's time for the big local, brought to you by Tulalip Resort Casino.
Olympia, Sammamish, Lakewood, Bellevue.
This is the big local on the Jason Rant Show.
Bellingham, Kirkland, Z-Town.
Stories about you, not about Seattle.
So we know that the media is hyper-focused on Seattle, so much so that it ends up ignoring all the interesting and weird and, yeah, quirky stories, I guess, happening all across the state of Washington. So weekday mornings at 7:30, we do something called the Big Local, thanks to our friends over at Tulalip Resort Casino. That means we get to talk about you and the communities you live in, and we get to ignore the city of Seattle. And this morning we start in Bellevue, where a rat fell from the ceiling of a restaurant. And who they're blaming is rather, I don't know, disingenuous is my position. So it happened on Tuesday at Japanesa. Is that how I say it? Japanesa or Japanessa? It's a restaurant in
Japanessa.
Japanessa. Well, don't look at me like that. It's Japanese, and if you add SSA to it, I say Japanesa. Whatever it is, the name of the restaurant is Japanessa. It's at Lincoln Square in Bellevue. A woman, Lynn Lee, was eating at this restaurant. She was seated in a booth when a mouse fell from the ceiling. And the mouse lands on so it's at a booth, but only the chair portion of the booth, like the top of the chair, because you saw the video, it was all caught on tape. And it was just kind of hanging out on the chair, which was weird because I thought rats scurry away. Right? Or maybe it was so shocked from the fall.
Yeah, maybe it was just...
because it just kind of stood
completely
there.
Completely disoriented.
Well, then employees got in and they pulled the chair portion of this sort of bench towards the exit, towards at least one of the doors nearby. and they got the door open and they sort of just pushed the seat over, and I presumably the rat then fell and ran away. But what was weird about this was they were pulling it the whole time and the rat didn't move.
Yeah, you know, that struck me as well.
Right? It's just, why didn't the rat run away?
Take off in any direction, or even like be like notice the food.
Yeah, just something.
About
it just kind of was,
but it just
chilling.
Froze.
That's what I'm saying. I wonder if it didn't expect to fall, and maybe the way it fell, maybe it hit its head or something.
Well, no one
it was
expects
a little disoriented.
To fall.
But that's my point, is that it was disoriented, yeah, or maybe shocked or something. But it was freaky, and so they end up getting rid of the rat. This woman claims, at least initially, after this all happened, the restaurant didn't apologize. They didn't get their meals comped, which you would at least expect from the sense of, a rat just fell in my lap almost. Maybe you should give me something. And they did say the next day she got an email from them apologizing and offering to comp the meal. She still plans to report what happened to King County Health Department. A spokesperson for the restaurant confirmed the incident, according to King 5, which I think they would have to because it was all caught on tape, said nearby construction is probably to blame for chasing rodents into the building. Now, while on the surface I'm rejecting that in this case, it's certainly plausible because so across the street from our studio, there is some construction, and we all in the building saw rats scurry from the construction site. They never got into the building here, as far as I know, but I've seen rats run away from the construction site, so I believe that part. But unless other businesses at Lincoln Square are experiencing rats getting involved, I find the excuse a little bit unbelievable, just a little bit.
No,
it's plausible.
It's a restaurant, so I think it's obvious what's happening here. This rat has always wanted to be a chef.
Like Ratatouille.
Yeah, and it snuck into this restaurant and...
So you just turned this completely around. Now this is really about a rat just trying to follow its dreams.
Yeah, he's been reading French cookbooks, and it's time for him to go find a human to manipulate.
Well, I wouldn't go to a restaurant called Japanese if you're a French restaurant. But, I mean, okay, fair enough. The spokesperson said the restaurant is working with Bellevue Square and pest control experts to ensure that no further incidents like this happen again. And pointed out, by the way, that they have a good rating from the health department. So, I mean, I guess, but good is not excellent. Isn't good in the middle?
I mean, I believe.
And isn't it all graded on a curve?
You can be as cleanly as possible and still have a mishap.
Sure, rats can still. Yeah, absolutely. I'm not saying you should boycott this restaurant or anything. I'm just saying I don't know if I 100% believe the construction thing, unless some of the other restaurants in the area are also suffering from this. I can certainly say that the way it was initially handled, if this report is correct, seems wrong. You should certainly say, I'm sorry, a rat just fell on you.
Is Lincoln Square like the big area that has the Henry's and all of this? Yeah, so there's several other restaurants. I guess you wait and see. Are you hoping that another restaurant gets
infiltrated? I'm not hoping anyone gets in it. If I'm Japanese, I would be hoping for it. So then they could say, look, it's happening everywhere else. But if it's not happening to the other restaurants, I'm a little freaked out. And I do wonder, and I feel bad for them in the sense that, especially if they're not at fault at all, people will judge the restaurant for this and probably not go there. And I'm kind of curious if, even if you believe this is a one-time thing in which extenuating circumstances led to this incident, would you ever go to a restaurant that experienced this in the future? Would you ever go there? 1-800-465-8770. Text me your answers, because I don't think I would ever go to a restaurant that experienced this.
It's the best time to go, because now there's going to be less people there, less wait, better service. They're going to be trying extra hard to please you.
Yeah, but they can't stop all the rats.
Yeah, so what?
Is the construction still going on? So presumably the rats are still
infiltrating. You might see a rat,
infiltrating.
But you'll get faster service.
That's where the flavor comes from.
Ew,
so gross. 1-800-465-8770.
Gross.
It's not me. I didn't do it.
You said it.
Yeah, but you were all thinking it.
No.
Yeah, oh yes.
No, I was not thinking
it. What if
that
the rat actually gets into some of the food and you don't realize it?
I would think immediately about Ratatouille again. And
you think it's healthy?
This was
it's a
his
good
master
rat.
Plan to.
And what's the difference between a mouse and a rat? Just the size? The age?
I think their size, and then like one has a longer tail.
This one had a long tail, though, didn't it?
Yeah, so it's a rat.
But they call it a mouse over at King 5.
Well,
That's another question I just don't know.
Fake news.
Every time I ask these questions, people say, you're just a city boy. You don't understand. You're correct. I am a city boy and I don't understand. 1-800-465-8770. No, I didn't say mice. I said mouse. Mice are baby
mice.
Mouses, multiple.
Mice and mouse are the same thing.
Are they?
Yeah, it's like...
It's the plural of mouse?
Goose and
yeah, mouses, geese. Mice, yeah. I don't know.
Or moose and meese.
Hey, Jason, Tom from the Canadian border worked in restaurants for over 10 years. That's minor in comparison to some of the other stuff you'll find even at well-known rated restaurants. Yeah, I don't want to go there. 1-800-465-8770. So apparently, this week we've seen a rash of stories in Washington State about machetes being used. We had the story out of Benton City. We had the story out of Kirkland. But now they're putting the machetes away for samurai swords. And I don't know yet if I'm more freaked out by a samurai sword or a machete. In this case, a Yakima man, his name is Tariq Muhammad. He was arrested for swinging a samurai sword at people, 26 years old, which kind of makes sense to me. Like, if you're going to have a samurai sword and you're a big dope, I'm going to assume you're in your mid-20s. And he was swinging it. He swung it at three different people. He didn't hurt anyone. But it's a 3-4-foot sword, and so that could be incredibly dangerous. So he ends up getting arrested. The sword is confiscated. He's booked into jail for investigation of assault. Bail was set at $75,000. Now, because it's Yakima and their news department's all run by interns, these are the only details we have about this story. And I've been trying to get more details, but they have none. Other than a guy was swinging a samurai sword at people, didn't hurt anybody, got arrested. They don't tell us why. And so was he drunk or high of some kind? Is he mentally ill? Did he just was like, I got a sword. It's kind of cool. Or
what
was
else do
he,
you do with a sword?
But that's my question. It's like, why do you buy a samurai sword other than as an art piece?
Right.
Or like a sculpture that you hang in some office somewhere, your bedroom or whatever. You're not supposed to do anything with
it. At least the machete has other uses besides murder.
Yes, because we learned several people emailed and texted yesterday that they use it to clear brush and bushes, particularly blackberry bushes. But I'm more scared of a samurai or of a machete like than a samurai.
That is
right.
You're more scared of
because a sword. I'm assuming it's got some weight to it.
A samurai sword is a weapon.
So is a machete.
No, a machete is a tool.
You can clear brush with a samurai sword too. All I'm
sure
saying is
you can,
you've
but...
got it. It's a bigger. Heavier item. Hold
clear
on, go
brush
with me.
With a shotgun if you were persistent.
Yeah, but go with me for a second. If you go with the samurai sword, it's heavier than a machete, I think. And it's certainly bigger. So you have to be a little bit more coordinated if you want to get a real swing at someone. Like, you've got to actually put the sword back behind your shoulder or something and then swing it and it's heavy.
You have to be less coordinated or you don't need to be as coordinated because it's
true.
Longer.
No, but you might have a bigger reach. But
yeah.
I'm saying in the torque... In your position. So you have to put it over your shoulder of some kind. So you've got to swing it back.
It's more
and
technique
then,
to it.
Yeah. And so a machete, you don't have to have a big swing. You have short swings. It has less of a reach. But I feel like it won't kill you instantly if it does make contact versus a sword, which will probably kill you almost immediately.
So you're saying if you were approaching somebody who you knew had no motor skills at all, one was holding a samurai sword, one was holding a machete, you would... rather have samurai sword guy.
I'd rather not deal with a machete than a samurai sword. And I feel
know.
It's more violent to have a machete.
Machete, you got
this
a
got
shot.
Really
it's
dark.
Shorter.
This got really dark, this conversation. Rats are a problem in Bellevue, says a texter. We were eating at a restaurant and a rat ran across the room. They handled it well. The issue we were told is they demolished an old Safeway. The crawl space was rat infested given the produce and butcher. So, yeah, we got another text that says the lesson learned here is don't eat at restaurants near a construction site. I'm out. Yeah, that makes sense. So now I no longer think Japanese is at fault here. It's the construction. And I'm freaked out and I'm never going out again. It's the Jason Rancher Show. Welcome back to the Jason Rancher. We're live in the Online Trading Academy studio. Thank you for subscribing to the podcast. If you don't, text the keyword podcast to the number 1-800-465-8770. Text the keyword podcast to 1-800-465-8770. The more podcast subscribers we have, not only does it help support the show and our advertisers, But the more we get and the more five-star reviews you give us, the higher the chances are that when someone goes on iTunes to search for podcasts, our show pops up, which just imagine for a moment some 22-year-old kid who has to listen to a conservative podcast, their heads are going to explode. Let's help trigger a whole bunch of snowflakes. Text the keyword podcast to the number 1-800-465-8770. Comedian Kevin Hart was in town last night. I don't know if you guys knew that. He was doing a stand-up show at Key Arena, and he is huge. He sells out arenas, and he stays away from politics entirely. He almost, I've never really even heard him talk about politics during interviews. And maybe part of the reason why he's so popular is he stays away from politics. Well, according to Kathy Griffin, a comedian who used to stay away from politics, but now she's a sociopath, that makes him a P word. Yeah. Kathy Griffin was doing an interview with USA Today. She said, I do feel like this is such an anxiety-ridden time for everyone that there's a thirst for all kinds of comedy. And look, if you want to not hear about Trump at all, go see Kevin Hart. He doesn't even mention Trump. I personally think that he's a P move because he's a black man. But I guess he's selling more tickets than I ever will. He is. You're a hack, Kathy Griffin. You're a crazy person. You're a sociopath. And I love how she suddenly got woke when Trump became president. Kathy Griffin, who would beg to be on anything Trump was associated with, begged to be on The Apprentice. All of a sudden, she's going after him because she suffered consequences for horrific, quote-unquote, comedy, which, again, she has the right to do. I don't think she should have been punished for it. But this whole idea that woke Kathy Griffin, white woman, is now getting mad that a black man doesn't take positions that she wants him to take. Think about that for a second. Think about the hypocrisy here. Think about the hypocrisy. I thought she was woke. I thought she actually stands up for people who are oppressed. Certainly we can say that Kevin Hart is more oppressed than a Kathy Griffin. Because that's what progressives say on a regular basis. When did Kathy Griffin get crazy? Like legit crazy. She is part of the reason, I think, that California wants to split into three separate states. This kind of thinking that comes from crazies in Hollywood. Because in California, this is huge news. Voters now will get to weigh in on whether or not California should be broken up into three states, which, of course, is a huge blow to Democrats because they've run the state of California into the ground. There's a venture capitalist by the name of Tim Draper. He led the charge. He spent almost $5 million of his own money to get this on a ballot. He says California pays the most, gets the least in return.
We couldn't do worse than what we got now. So we pay the highest taxes and we get the worst service.
So they want to split California up into three states.
Well, we made it so each of the three are as even as possible, as even in population, as even in wealth.
So Northern California would include San Francisco and Sacramento. Southern California would include San Diego, Bakersfield, and Fresno. I wouldn't want to live in that Southern California. I mean, San Diego is kind of nice, but Bakersfield and Fresno. And then just California, which would be Los Angeles and go all the way up to Monterey. So that's where crazy Kathy Griffin would live. They believe that this would clean up the government in California.
You get rid of all the sacred cows. You get rid of all the baggage, all the things that California has been sort of adding to itself.
So even if this gets approved by voters, and I have no idea how it's going to go, it would still be an incredibly long situation. You can approve this and the Congress then gets involved. The Congress could just say no. And my sense is the Congress would say no. But I don't know. California is one of those states. It's really, really big. Right now it's failing a whole lot of people. And if you get enough support and momentum, maybe it changes some minds. My sense is you're just going to freak out the Congress that's not going to want to send the message that other states should go ahead and do this, because clearly this would not work for every state. I know we've had the conversation here in Washington about splitting it up so we have Western Washington and an Eastern Washington as a state. I don't know financially if that's smart for Eastern Washington because of the economy there is so much different than the economy in Western Washington. The economy here is in a lot of ways subsidizing what we do in Eastern Washington. But I don't know. I generally, if people actually want it, they should get it.
Right. But and other states aren't as big and populous as California, so...
Yeah, but I mean, look, even Wyoming survives and it's not as populous.
Even if you split California into third, it's still more... Each of those thirds is still a bigger state than others.
Fair enough. If you want to weigh in on this, text us 1-800-465-8770. You're listening to the Jason Ranch.